Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. With me, I have a very special guest with me. I have Justin here with me. We're here to review A Nightmare on Elm Street. I know that it's November. I know this. But it's okay. It's going to be fine. This last horror movie that I'm reviewing, as far as everything goes, because of the fact that Halloween is over with now. So, without further ado, let's welcome Justin to the show, and let's do this. And hey, man, welcome to the show.
What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
That's good. This is your first time being on the show. Tell everybody about your podcast and what you guys do over there, because you guys are doing some pretty good stuff.
Yeah, we're trying. We just had two directors on from the one has the number one movie on Hulu right now called Carved. We had the director on from that, and we had the director from Mickey's Mousetrap, which premiered 2 months ago, and he was just on our show. And we just basically new releases come out. We hop on and we talk about it, give our ratings. Should people see it? Should people skip it? Or just don't even bother. Wait for streaming, as we say. Because
exactly.
We are here to save people's money, because it is really expensive to see all these movies every single week they come out. So we just review new releases, sometimes old releases, sometimes indie films that often send us stuff. We review it and we just give it to the people to make their lives a little bit easier when trying to find something good to watch, because it's really, really hard to watch some new stuff nowadays, because we got, how many streaming services do we have now?
We have 500. Right, exactly. Thanos would actually have to be collecting it all on his gauntlet by now.
Pretty much. And it's like $60 to have Hulu, HBO Max, Amazon Prime, and all with ads. And we just wanted to just tell people, skip this or go watch this today. Right. That's what we do.
So in order for people to know what podcast you're from, tell them the name of your podcast.
We are Lights, Camera, Reels. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
Okay. So my question for you, this is what I always ask my guests, is this. So as far as nostalgia goes for Nightmare on Elm Street, Where do you hold this at as out of 10? Best out of 10.
Best out of 10. That's, I'm glad you asked me that question, because it is a 9.5 for me, because it holds a very special place in my heart. It is my favorite horror movie of all time.
You see, with me, I have to give it at least an 8.5 out of 10, because I had this movie scared the hell out of me as a kid. I was 6 or maybe 7 years old when I seen this movie. I saw this movie and it scared the fuck out of me. Like, I had a nightmare about Freddy throwing me into the damn fire in the boiler room.
You're probably not the only one either.
No, the funny thing is, once he ends up turning to me and I'm in bed and I'm actually feeling the flames in the bed and everything, all of a sudden you see this, I see nothing but Freddy's face coming towards me. Like a 3D image. I'm like, okay. I start waking up, screaming. Mom's like, okay, we're not going to deal with this anymore. But I ended up getting like the regular Nintendo game of Nightmare on Elm Street, though.
Yes. The good old days.
Yes.
Well, that was for the first Nintendo?
Yeah. For the very first Nintendo, they had a Nightmare on Elm Street video game. I remember you get to dress up as somebody from like karate. You get to go on ahead and also be a wizard. It was a pretty cool video game back in the day.
Oh, yeah. And then right after that, was the Friday the 13th before or after that video game?
I would have to say it was before. Because
I think it was before, yeah.
Yeah, because I always had that one before Nightmare on Elm Street. I just happened to be in the mall as a kid and I happened to see it.
Those were the days we can go out and buy physical copies of games.
Exactly, man.
And it wasn't $70 either.
No, it wasn't. It was like, what, 40 maybe?
It was $40 for a new release.
Right, and my parents thought that was expensive. Now look at today's time.
If some of my friends were still alive, oh my God. $70, they'd be like, nope, I ain't playing video games anymore.
Exactly.
Terrible.
So now that we actually got the nostalgia out of the way, now we're going to go on ahead and strip the nostalgia away and give it a modern day rating. By doing that, we're going to talk about this movie scene by scene and dissect it. And then we'll give you our modern day rating, best out of 10 after this. So I just want to say welcome, horror fans. Today, we're diving into the film that did the impossible. It made sleep terrifying. It's A Nightmare on Elm Street. The 80s classic that gave us a totally healthy relationship with sleep and a permanent side eye for striped sweaters. If you think about it, Freddy Krueger, the man who pops up in your dreams with knives for fingers and a terrible skin routine. Freddy's little high maintenance for a dream guest, don't you think? Plus, he's got the whole that whole, if you see him, you're probably doomed. So, without further ado, let's go on ahead. Let's dissect this thing. So, a man is shown in a boiler room, walking toward a work table, picking a paper sack off of the floor. On the way, upon dumping the contents of the sack, which are several metal pieces, on the work table, which already has various items on it, he picks up one of the metal pieces with his right hand and then picked up a knife, which have already been on the table, from the table with his left hand. He then picks up an already existing glove, which becomes the basis of the glove, and he is making with his left hand. He then starts cutting the glove with the knife. He then picked up the folding straight razor with his right hand, and then he holds a middle piece with his left hand and hammers it with the right hand. And then he holds a middle piece around the edge of the workbench with his left hand and files it with his right hand. A middle piece is then shown in a vise, and he is wielding a knife. Fix it with a blowtorch. He is then shown hammering at one of the middle pieces, and he is then flexing a middle piece. He is then flexing a middle piece with the blade attached. So what did you think about him wielding the glove together to make the claw for Freddy? And also too, I mean, what did you think of the whole setup of it being like a square and then it extends later on as a widescreen angle?
That is what probably drew me in the most, because you see this man just walking up to a table and just grabbing the sack, and you just see him just heavily breathing as he's making this. And this music is just dark and gloomy, and it's just going up. And then all of a sudden you see him grab, like put it all together, and then he flexes his hand, and then it goes into the title screen. I think it's probably one of the best openings to a horror movie.
I think so too, because of the fact that you have that mystery element of who this guy is. You don't even know what he looks like. You don't know at this point of what you're getting. And even the trailer set in itself, they didn't even show you what Freddy looked like. It was like a mystery kind of thing. All they know was a Nightmare on Elm Street. That's all it was.
Yeah.
At that time. And I like the little mystery element in case anybody ever hasn't seen it or anything like that. There's a little bit of mystery element within it in itself. It's like, okay, who the hell is Freddy Krueger? Who is this guy? Why is this a Nightmare on Elm Street? Why is he down in the boiler room? Why is he putting these things together? What's going on with that? So I love how they put that package together. And then the small screen to me is like symbolization of the fact of how we used to view things on TV.
Oh yeah.
And then it goes into the wider screen for that, for the ratio, for the one that we have now.
Yeah.
Like, it almost feels like we're doing surveillance on Freddy.
Almost. Cause as soon as the title screen hits, it goes, boom, widescreen. And I'm like, I just want to know how they created that screen, like that small, and then aspect ratio it all the way up to widescreen by 16:9, because that is phenomenal. Like, because that is, I think that is probably what drew me into this movie, just the opening sequence, because you don't really see his face until like what?
Probably about, about 15, 20 minutes in you. Well, so, yeah. Even when you see his claw, you don't really get to, even whenever you see that one scene with Tina, you don't even really see him.
You basically see the back of his head and his hat. That's all you really see.
Right.
He sticks his head out. And that should be how movies are today, because we don't really have attention grabbers. We don't really have an opening like that no more. Because
no, we don't. It's like, bam, we're in, no slow pacing, nothing like that.
Title and screen.
Right, exactly. It's like, okay, that's it. There's no lead up to the title screen.
Nope.
Or
just,
anything.
Just names, credit. You may get what the movie is, and then you're on to your first scene. You don't really have openings like that no more.
No, you don't really have like a cold opening, which is something that I miss.
Oh, yeah.
As well. But then after that, you know, you get this other scene that's being played out too. You also have the teenager Tina is first shown against a bright white background, which could be interpreted as this strange white mist described in the equivalent part of this. A hallway with pipes on the upper walls spraying steam and leaking water is then shown with what is apparently the bright white background at one end, with Tina standing in front of it. There is water all over the floor. Tina runs away from the bright white background, briefly turns around to look at several times, then turns back around several times and continues running away from it. Freddy says Tina's name. Tina turns around. There's also a bright white background at the other end of the hallway. There's also a sheep in the hallway. Tina turns and enters the boiler room. The area where Tina enters the boiler room appears not to be floor level. She appears to be on the catwalk. Disfigured man is shown staring at her. So I like this element of the goat being in this as well in the hallway. It gives you a little bit of a spooky atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
That's one thing I have to say about Nightmare on Elm Street movie. It's very atmospheric whenever it comes down to the boiler room. And also whenever you look at the hallways of the school with the goat just staring at her, and just as Freddy's looking at her and, you know, she just wakes up. And you have the douchebag boyfriend, and then you also had the mother as well that's looking at Tina. And I like how Tina's looking around like, what the hell just happened? Because I thought this guy gutted me.
Yeah.
And she has like holes. And then this is the first response that her mother goes, okay, honey, okay. Just make sure that you cut your fingernails so that way that doesn't happen again. You shouldn't be doing that. Okay. And then the husband's like, hey, baby, why don't we go over to Vegas and get married? How about that? It's like, screw your daughter.
If your fingernails are that long and does that to your nightgown, then there's something wrong with you. Because it was just slivers of nightgown just right there. And you see them. It's a big old slash mark. And the mom's response is, be sure to cut your nails tomorrow. By the way, I'm out. Basically what it was.
It was like, okay, I just want to bone this guy here. And you're ruining it all for me because you woke me up in the middle of the night.
Screaming because you were going to die in your dreams.
Right. And it was just a dream. And then I have to tell you to trim your fingernails because I just don't give a shit because I'm a horrible mother. And I just want to fuck this guy that I barely even know.
What is with horror movies having the worst parents ever?
they really do. Even in the one where I forgot which scene it was, I forgot what part it was, but remember that one scene? He goes, "Hey, where's the bourbon?"
Yes.
And then Freddy goes, "I said, where's the bourbon?"
Yes. And there's a scene in this movie too that really shows how poor this parent is too.
Yes.
And we'll get to that one because that scene alone just goes, come on, can we get better parents back in the 80s? Just a little bit. The 80s was a horrible time to be a parent, it seems like.
It really was. It was rough to be a teenager in the 80s because it's like, okay, well, I have an alcoholic mother, and she's banging this guy who wants to go to Vegas.
Probably addicted to drugs.
Me. Right. So, you know, it's all good. She's going to do some blow. She's going to go get married, and then I'm going to be over here getting me some pizza, and then I'm going to be with Johnny Depp. So it's going to be good.
Pretty much.
But yeah, then the next morning, three girls in white dresses are shown playing jump rope, while the fourth girl in white in the dress holds a ball and watches it in what is clearly in the physical world on the front lawn of Springwood High School. Glenn Lance, who is the boyfriend of her friend Nancy Thompson, drove both her and Tina to the school in a red convertible. When they reached the sidewalk and began towards the high school, Tina tells Glenn and Nancy about the dream of the later tells Tina that she had a bad dream herself. Rod Lane, no, not like a porn star name or anything, who is Tina's boyfriend, then comes up behind them and tells Tina that he woken up with an erection. Tina then makes an unflattering comment about Rod's penis, which Rod doesn't appreciate because he's Rod, and then runs off to the school's front entrance. So this is my question about the three girls. I'm like, okay, so these girls are singing the song, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. You would actually think that these kids would know about the legend of what happened to Freddy in this small town.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't.
No.
But I think it was the whole fact that it was a town secrecy because of the fact that they didn't want that. Basically, they just wanted to protect their kids. That's how I got it.
Yeah, I always thought the little girl doing jump rope were victims of Freddy, and they were just warning everybody else of him. That was my take on it.
Now, do you think that the girl, the people can see them or anything like that, or is this like a prologue to just a warning to them that they can't hear?
It's a warning to which they can't hear, because I don't think we have actually gotten confirmation from all the other ones that people can actually see the little girls. I think it's just a lead-in. But,
and you see, do you think that they should have done that where it was like a town legend and then you have that song playing and then they see the girls jump roping and be like, hey,
yes.
Why are you singing that song?
Yes. I think actually in Freddy versus Jason, I think we get confirmation that somebody can see them in the dream world, though. But they can't see them in the actual like real world. So,
well, not only that, but even whenever you get that one part in I want to say it was like Freddy's Dead or Nightmare on Elm Street 4, basically, where the little girls over there drawing the boarded up house.
Yep.
And so in the dream, you can see that little girl that was jump roping in the first one, and there's interaction with that. Hmm. But I just wish that there was more of a lead up to the fact that there's this legend in this town known as Freddy. No one talks about Freddy because of the fact of the things that he's done to these kids because he's a child strangler.
Yep.
I just wish that they would have actually expanded a little bit on that.
But yeah.
That was like the only little nitpick I have as far as this being like a modern day view of it. But looking at nostalgia, it works.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day when this movie did come out, I think nobody really looked into it that much like we are now, because we're how old now? And this movie came out in like 84. So now people are like us are watching this and be like, why can't we get like a side story? So like a prequel, like give us something that incorporates this into like a movie somewhere, like a timeline, like lineup. I think that would be great.
I think so too. And I think that we needed to see some type of visual of this person doing something wrong and making us feel dangerous for him. For these kids, even if it's like a shot in the back where you have the camera angle in the back and he's doing something and you don't have to reveal his face, or it's just the town thinking that he's doing something wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But they try to do that in the reboot and it doesn't work.
Why'd you have to bring up the reboot?
It feels in so many ways. But then, like I said, you also have... you know, you have Rod that comes up and he goes, well, I had a hard on this morning. That's what I'm like, okay, this dude's is a douchebag. This is supposed to be like the bad boy type cliche kind of thing.
Yep. With and his porno name, as you said earlier.
Exactly. My name is Rod. And I don't want you to talk about my penis because I am Rod.
And we're 10 minutes into this movie and we already have penis metaphors. It's hilarious. And it's after they show these little girls. And I think that's terrible timing.
It is. It's very terrible timing.
I didn't even think about that till now. But, that's terrible.
But, you know, of course, every character like this guy, it has a leather jacket. He also has a switchblade. He also threatens, Nancy's boyfriend with the blade.
Yep.
As well. And, you know, I like this scene where it's setting up as like, well, I had a bad dream. I had a bad dream too. What was your dream about? And I'll tell you my dream. And it's just weird on how it connects.
Yeah.
And there's something more there. I love the fact that there's more to meet that meets the eye whenever Nancy and Tina are both talking.
Yeah.
And then you also have Nancy's boyfriend. They're like, well, did you have a nightmare? But at that point, he was already running.
Yeah, he was
into the building.
He was running away, so you don't really get that answer right that second. But who do you get the answer later?
Yeah, he did. Got the answer. Not the one
you really wanted, but you still got the timeline right out the gate, man. Like I think as an overall horror movie that connects all the dots, I think this one is up at the top, man. Like, and we're already like what 10 minutes in?
Yeah, we're about 10 minutes in, and it's setting up a lot. It's actually setting up the world building and what we're getting within this dream world. We're also getting to know Nancy for the first time, just as we're getting to know Glenn and Rod and everybody and those characters. And I like the fact that it's just those characters, and it's not any more than those characters. Otherwise, I feel like it's oversaturated.
Oh, yeah.
To the point. So I like the fact, too, because I don't have to worry about trying to remember people's names. It's like, okay, I got this.
And they were basically showing that that these kids were basically just like every other group in high school, basically living their lives. And all of a sudden, this happens and it brings everybody closer together and trying to find out how to defeat him, try to fight him, trying to survive.
And right, but... But this one is more like Nancy's just trying to figure stuff out as well. Yeah. And I like how it has that slow build to it. It's like, I'm trying to figure this out. I'm not sure what's going on, but there's something more that's going on. And it's just weird that my best friend, who also has the same dream about this guy in a red and green sweater, that's actually haunting my dreams. So I like that little element to it.
Yeah, and it really focuses on her for 80% of the movie, like almost 90% of the movie.
Isn't it weird that we don't open up to Nancy? It makes it as if that Tina was the one who was supposed to be carrying the film.
Yeah, and basically they made you think this person is going to be the main character. And by the way, 30 minutes in, boy, were we all wrong.
Right. And that's what I like. I got rid of the character trope of that because we got that with the very first Halloween movie. And I like the fact that it got rid of that whole entire thing of like, okay, let's stop with the cliches and let's try to do something different. And I like how Wes does this. This is the beautiful thing about Wes Craven whenever it comes down to his original work, is the fact that he always tries to try to do something different.
And with you saying, like, basically bringing up Wes Craven and Scream, if anybody's ever seen Scream, the first person to die was Drew Barrymore, who was a blonde. And it's just weird that the first person to go in this movie is also a blonde. And I just made that connection too. That's kind of weird.
I guess Wes had a thing with blondes where he didn't like blondes too much.
That's weird to me. I just remembered the first scene of Scream and Drew Barrymore is the first to go. And then thinking about this movie and rewatching it for the 954th time this week, and I'm like, whoa, blonde too? That's wild.
It is definitely wild whenever you think about it under this context. But to be honest with you, Rod, to me at this point, is the most punchable face in this.
Oh, 1,010%. It's almost like he watched The Outsiders far, far too much and basically tried to be Pony Boy Curtis over here.
Right. It's like, you know what? People like that look. I think I'm going to grease my hair up. And I think I'm going to try and stand on the street corner and act like I'm tough. And I'm going to hate on people that hate the way my penis looks.
And with a name like Rod, I already want to punch him. Right. Rod Lane. Come on now.
Exactly. So Tina and then tells Nancy about she couldn't go back to sleep after the nightmare she had. When she asked Nancy what she dreamed about, her friend refuses to answer. Glenn implies that he'd have a nightmare as well and runs. Okay, so we talked about that. Tina then says to Nancy that maybe they're about to have a big earthquake, saying that things had gotten weird before they go into the school to start class that night. Tina, Nancy, and Glenn are having a sleepover at 620 Elm Street to make the distraught Tina feels better. As she is still troubled by her nightmare, however, as Tina describes the man she encountered in her dream, this makes Nancy remember that she had also dreamt of the same person. She describes more details of the figure. He wore a red and green sweater and has a large fingernails, to which Nancy assures that he made himself, which he scratches over everything, which makes a scary noise. Although he registers to look like registers a look of recognition himself, Glenn assures them that this they are talking about is impossible. But I like how the mother's out of town. Tina's mother's out of town, and you want to count on your friends to be there for them because this nightmare is just tearing her apart. And I'm sorry, Johnny Depp is not the most threatening person to actually have there. You would want to have Rod there before you would want to have Glenn there.
And he's wearing a sweater over his shirt, and I'm like, what is he going to do if this dude comes for this entire group? Right. I already know who the first one to go is going to be. And I'm like, of all people, why didn't you invite Rod over? Why didn't you have both of them? Like, and I'm like, this dude is about to get it first.
Because Glenn is basically a preppy dude. Yeah. And you can definitely, this guy is hitting the tennis court. And
or a bocce ball court.
Exactly. But then you also have this whole entire deal too, where he actually has these sounds to make it look like he's at his friend's house. I love the sound tape of this. It reminds me of Home Alone with Kevin with the talk boy.
Yes. With the old big stereo system with the two tape recorders. Oh my God.
What I want to know is how did he get that out of his fucking house?
Without nobody his mom knowing. Noticing. Yeah. Because you really can't put that in your pocket, man. That is the old school stereo that is probably like what, 50 pounds? It was like 50 pounds back in the day. Yeah. And I just want to know where he recorded that entire tape, because it sounds like he has the entire tape recorded of sounds, because it goes from drag racing to gunshots to people arguing, just all these random sounds on this tape.
Like, I love the soundtrack though. That was pretty cool. If I was going to spend the night, I would want to have Glenn on my side in a sense, so that way I can at least get him to throw the tape on. But let's just put it like this: Tina and Nancy both ratted him out with them screwing up the tape,
and them laughing hysterically in the background. That's a dead giveaway,
right? Yeah, Mom. Don't worry. That's just the TV. Don't worry about it. Okay? We're fine. All of a sudden, you hear a woman crying. It's just, I'll make sure I turn down the TV. I promise. Okay?
Call 911. I'll call 911. 911. I'm just like, dude, you know, just stop it.
He's still going with it. It's like he's caught, but he's still gonna go with this lie that he's doing.
But if given him a modern day parent in that scene alone, he would have been like, just come home right now and accept your punishment right now.
That's a wrap. That's
at least 2 weeks right there.
Exactly. But you know, and then also too, he tries to make moves on Nancy too. Kissing her neck, just no, we have to be here for Tina. I'm like, the fuck you do?
You weren't there for them 5 minutes later in this scene, now were you?
No. But you're going to be there for Tina, even though she's by herself. But then Glenn hears a noise outside. He goes on ahead and expects it, and it's Rod that scares the hell out of him.
He comes in after the fact, where both boyfriends should have been there in the first place. Let's be real here. But he's over here. He's the tough guy. He's joking around. He knows that his girlfriend had a dream, and he's outside making noise, screwing around. Name like Rod just gives it all away.
Exactly. But my question is this, though, man. Like, what did you think of the fact, too, of the noises that Freddie was making in the dream and stuff like that? Because I'll be honest with you, that doesn't seem like something that you would actually make with a glove. That doesn't sound like a regular noise.
No, it's almost, to me, it's almost like a cat screech. Because I would think if a claw was on something metal, like a chalkboard or a pipe, just it would be a different kind of noise. It feels like it's more of a screech. In that scene, it's more of a screech to me.
I think so, too. I think it would have been more menacing if you just had Freddie just, you know, playfully thumping his glove onto the pipe itself.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And then just gliding his hand on the pipe itself instead of trying to actually scratch the surface, you know.
Yeah. I think that scene was a little far-fetched for me, because that's not a glove. But
then again, it's a dream, so therefore it could wind up being one of those things that sounds might not make the same sounds that it would make in real life either.
That's true, too.
So, you know, it's playing with the fantasy and realism kind of a little bit at the same time.
It's borderline.
Yeah. So it's interpreted in any way that you want to. You can interpret it any way you want.
Basically.
But I also like the fact, too, that's like, well, I had a dream about this disfigured figure, and I don't know what to do about it. Well, I had a dream about him, too. And so we already made the connection and established that the first time. But it's like now they're trying to beat us over the head with it again. It's like, okay, we get it, girls. We get it. We're seeing a disfigured figure, okay? You guys are having the same dream. You don't have to get – we're already sold on this, okay? That's why you're there. That's why Nancy's there. That's why Glenn's there. Rod, he's just there to bang you, and that's it.
We know why he's there.
Right. He's not there to protect her.
He's there with his name, Rod.
The three teenagers suddenly hear noises in the background of the house. This is what we talked about already. Hold on one second. Then, but yeah, I just think that, you know, I think it's this scene sets up a lot, especially whenever now that it's time for them to go to bed.
Yeah.
And yeah.
This is where it pops off for me, because we're supposed to be here for her. But all of a sudden, a couple seconds later, it pans to Johnny Depp laying minding his own business. And what does he hear in the other room? He ain't protecting her so much.
Nope. But he is protecting her vagina, though.
That's the only thing he's protecting, because if anybody's coming to get that, he ain't going to let anybody in that room.
No, he's not. But, okay. I like how Glenn is like, okay, thank you. I do appreciate this so much. You know, he's really pissed off because of that. at this point, you know, they're going at it, and then they're going back to, they wind up going to sleep. And then Tina has a nightmare. And then then all of a sudden you see her levitate off the bed, and she's getting ripped apart. Basically, her stomach gets sliced open. She's spinning around in circles. She's getting dragged up on the ceiling, and Rod gets slapped by Tina's feet and knocks him unconscious.
Yep. Knocks him in the corner.
Right. But I like how I feel bad for Rod at this moment, because now Rod is defenseless. He does not know what to do, because there was nobody in the bed with him beforehand. And now all of a sudden there is.
But he can't see nobody.
No.
All he sees is claw marks going down her stomach and her basically ripped to shreds.
And I think the actor that played Rod does a fantastic job of showing the fear.
Oh yeah, because there's like what, two or three scenes where it just shows his face in the corner. It doesn't really show anything else, and I think that really makes this scene pop more, because that makes more and more people scared watching at home. Just seeing somebody's face just pan in like that, and then. It basically takes over the scene, and then it pans back to Tina being spun around like a basketball.
Right. But let's also talk about the crucifix scene, though, too.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that scene.
I love how it looks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where the crucifix is hanging up on the wall. Freddy is leaning. You see a shadow on the wall, and he's kind of leaned in. And then the crucifix just falls on the bed with Nancy. I don't know. There's just something that makes my skin crawl every single time I see that scene. And it's so good.
That scene, that's just wild to me. And she wakes up, and then she grabs the cross, and she goes, puts it on her nightstand, goes about her sleep again. I'm like, that doesn't draw a red flag anywhere. Like, there was just something over you, technically, and you just basically put your cross back on your bedside.
No. It happens.
I'm up out of there. I'm sorry. If that's me, I'm up out of there.
I'm with you as well.
I would find my couch so fast, be like, nothing bad can happen down here. It's my couch.
Exactly. And but also too, Tina's also having that nightmare though too. Let's talk about the nightmare in the alley as well, that she investigates who threw the rocks on the encounters. The discreet man again reveals himself. This is the first indication that Tina is dreaming. After chasing her down the alleyway in the house, Freddy catches up to her in her backyard after scaring her by cutting off two of his own fingers with a knife on his glove. He finally gets a hold on her. As he scuffles with her, Rod wakes up to Tina screaming as she continues to scuffle with the man under the blanket. When Rod removes it from her, he finds Tina finally shaking as the man uses his glove to slash at her chest. Though Rod doesn't see him, the latter is forced to watch as Tina dragged out of bed and on the walls and on the ceiling. As Rod helplessly watches while same time screaming out for her, he reaches out to Tina before she falls onto the bed and tumbles on the floor dead. Nancy, who woke up on Tina's screams, tries to get Rod to open the door, but she could only hear him calling out to the murderer as she doesn't see who killed her. When Nancy and Glenn manages to get inside the room, they find Tina's bloody body through Rod, though Rod has escaped through the window. I would actually escape, though, too, because of the fact it freaked me out. Because
yeah, but here's the thing. This is where my brain goes. So I apologize in advance. If anybody's going to be accused of murder out of that group, who would be the one?
It'd be Rod.
Let's be real here. ran out of the room in jeans and a leather jacket.
Like, right. That's number one suspect.
That's number one suspect.
Right. And Glenn is like, I can see the cops going, well, who do you think you did it, son? Well, I don't think it's Glenn. Glenn, who else was there? Well, there's a guy named Rod. That what does he have? Oh, a leather jacket? Yeah. A switchblade? Yeah. Boots, motorcycle boots? Yep. Okay. He's that's our guy.
You forgot one thing. Criminal record.
Criminal record.
That's the rap sheet.
All over the place. Indicate it.
Oh, 1,000%. Like, and the fact that he just bails. If he would have stayed around, I think it would have gone differently. But the fact that he bails just puts him under the spotlight more. And with his leather jacket and his jeans and his biker boots and his rap sheet and his knife. That's just an open and shut case, basically.
Right. And, you know, at this point, though, too, you know, you also have, I love the dream sequence, though, of Freddy cutting off his fingers. And you also have, you have that going on. Then she pulls on off his mat, his face. It turns into a skull.
Yeah.
And then the long arms
going down each side of the alleyway.
Yeah. Oh, man. Even though it was a short dude dressed as Freddy, but at that time, though, it worked for its time.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely horrifying.
And plus, we didn't really have good effects back then, so they had to use what they had to use, and it was effective. Right. So I'm okay
with it. I loved it. I love that scene. Every single time I see a dark alley, I automatically think of that.
Now the fact that I didn't know that that it was a short person with that just ruined the scene for me. Thanks.
Sorry,
I didn't know that. Why'd you ruin it? I just lost the point. There you go. Damn it.
Sometime later at the Springwood 5th Precinct Police Station, Nancy's father, Police Lieutenant Donald Thompson, and a senator are discussing the indictment and the murder that had occurred. Lieutenant Thompson speaks to Nancy and her mother as he is angry that Nancy was sleeping in the same house as Rod, who he refers to as a lunatic delinquent and believes that Rod is responsible for Tina's death. Nancy denies that Rod is a lunatic, but makes no attempt to deny that he is delinquent. Donald asks Nancy if she has a sane explanation for what Rod did. But I like it. He didn't do it, Dad. I feel bad for the dad in this movie. It's like,
oh, same.
It's like, what the fuck? Now this is why I got divorced from your mother. Now I'm having to deal with this. You know?
That is every line that has ever had to stand up for their bad boyfriend ever in their life. He didn't do nothing, Dad. Like, that line to me is very, very just wrong, because 9 times out of 10, if they said they didn't do nothing, 10 out of 10, they did.
Right. And not only that, but Nancy doesn't even know if he did anything or not. She was on the other side of the door. All she did was hear Rod screaming on top of his lungs.
And because she doesn't come in until she's already dead on the floor and he's already out.
Right. And at that point, you know, Tina's body already landed on the bed. And I love how the blood splatter is. It lands right on Rod even more.
Oh, that
little extra splash of blood splatter was actually pretty cool.
When she landed on the bed, it kind of sounds like a pool too. If you go back and listen to it,
yeah.
It
goes, I'm like, he didn't do anything, Dad. Why were you there? Oh, we were trying to keep Tina company because she's been having some bad dreams. So we just wanted to help. So Glenn and I thought it would be okay for us to spend the night with Tina. We find out too, and I didn't realize this, that they were even divorced. Like the mother, and the mother's also a drunk too.
Yeah.
She's an alcoholic.
I forgot about that. Damn it. Oh man.
Like, we're going to joke around about the father through this whole entire movie though, because she's like, I'm just done. I'm done.
Nobody beats the mom though. That's the thing. The dad has it easy.
Right.
Oh my god, I just forgot about the mom laying on the sofa later on. Oh jeez.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about this other thing that happens now, okay? So it's the next day. Nancy wants to go to school. Then you have this thing played out where it's like, Nancy, I don't think you should go to school. I need to go to school, Mom. I'd rather be at school than think about what happened last night. And here, have some coffee. And I like how all of a sudden you don't know where the coffee's at, where it came from. It's just automatically just shows up. It's and it looks like a Folgers commercial. It's like, oh, coffee.
And the way she hands it to her, it's like they were going to put something on the mug. because right. she hands it to her sideways, and then she just, as you said, a Folgers in your cup commercial over here,
right?
So and, bad.
But I don't blame Nancy in a way. It's like, look, I need to do something to keep my mind busy. Otherwise, all I'm going to think about is what happened, and I lost my friend. So I get that. But then the father goes on ahead and leaves her for bait. It has like a Michael Myers kind of vibe to it because she sees a guy standing there and all of a sudden he's just gone.
Yeah.
And then Rod just comes out of nowhere, out of the bushes.
And what better way to say that
you're innocent? Right. Here's the thing though, man. What better way to tell someone that they're innocent? By grabbing you, putting you in the bushes. Your hands are still bloody. You didn't think about going to like a rest stop, wiping off your hands or anything like that.
But you're still wearing everything from last night, bloody, as you said. Just how long was he in that bush? And where could he not go to get? And I know back in the day when this movie took place, there was opportunities to clean yourself off where they probably wouldn't have questioned you that much if you walked in with blood on your hands. But to not be able to show to her that you were innocent, I mean, as you said, Rod, no, just still bloody and nasty, grabs her by the back and puts his hand over her mouth like he's a professional kidnapper.
Right. And he goes, I didn't do it, Nancy. I didn't do it. I promise. I didn't do it.
You were the only one on the other side of the door.
I know, Rod. I know. It's okay. And the next thing you know it, the cops come swooping in, and he's in the kind of the middle of it. And the father goes, "Why the hell were you not? Why the hell are you even out now, right now, anyways?
Why are you going to school?" He yells at her.
Right? Why are you going to school? Dad, he didn't do it.
And what's funnier with this scene? If you go back and watch the scene, there's no sirens. There's no cars pulled up. They just come out of the bush with their guns drawn.
Actually, there are some police cars that do come.
Yeah, afterwards. But after we see this guy come in so siphon filter-ish, just like super sleuth over here and pulls a gun on him. And then he tries to run. And then that's when you see all the other cops come trying to run him down.
Right. But I just thought it was hilarious, though, because the father's like, okay, fuck my life. Okay. And just, so
just the eye rolls from him, it just gets me every time. He's like, shit.
I didn't notice this until I started doing the review for it. Like, I like this is why I love reviewing films, man. Like, you pick up on things that you've never seen before, so you have to really be glued in. And I never noticed how annoyed the father at this point.
Like, I watched it this week and I just counted the eye rolls and just the shit, and then him just walk away just mad as shit for no reason,
right? But here's the thing. During class, Nancy notices Tina's corpse is in a body bag standing outside a classroom. Leaving class, she finds the body bag being dragged down the hall, leaving a trail of leaked blood. Turning the corner, Nancy knocks over a hall guard who is wearing a green and red striped sweater. The sleeve was a solid red like Freddy's sweater. She demands, where's your pass? To which Nancy replies, screw your pass, and runs down the hall. However, the hall guard calls out to Nancy and Freddy's looking back. Nancy sees her wearing the same glove that Freddy wore. The hall guard tells Nancy, hey, Nancy, you're running in the hallway, before letting out an evil laugh. Nancy continues to follow the trail of blood, because that's what white people do, down at a stairway and into Springwood High School's basement. Yeah, that's completely normal. But
well, back then, maybe.
I don't know. I don't even think back then.
Hey, they had some hellish drugs back in '84, man. Come on.
Okay.
Suspend your disbelief.
Maybe the same stuff that they had in Wolf of Wall Street. How about that?
Oh, definitely.
The Quaaludes.
Oh, and another drug that rhymes with cocaine, probably.
Yeah, that too. The mix, not so good. But I liked how the fact that we don't know that she's dreaming.
No,
or she
really don't.
Right. The only indication is the kid that's reading off Shakespeare in the classroom.
Yeah, that's weird in general. Like, shouldn't the teacher be doing that back in the day? Like, you have a kid reciting word for word Shakespeare over here?
Unless it's just punishment work for the kid. It's like, okay, you're being destructive, so you're going to read Shakespeare.
Yeah, then maybe. Yeah, there's really nothing here that says, that screams out dream to me.
No.
So she goes into the basement.
And then sees the body being dragged.
Dragged down the hallways, and she just follows the blood all the way down.
But even whenever you see Tina in the body bag, she's like, Nancy.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And then the body bag's being dragged by itself. As well as, like, there goes Tina. But I love the play on the on this where she knocks down the hall guard and then it's Freddy's glove. And I love that whole entire thing of, is it a dream? Is it not a dream? When she, stuff like that inside the classroom. Because I remember as a kid, I'm like, is she dreaming? Is she not dreaming? I still love the, and now that I'm an adult, I was like, okay, she's dreaming.
Yeah.
And stuff. So that's something I really have to say that I really still enjoy is watching those elements play out.
And the fact that she has a sweater and her face is all bloody and then she has the glove on, no running in the halls. That's just iconic right there to me. That's just it for me. I didn't need anything else right then and there. I just needed that because those lines are legendary with this franchise. Like,
right. I think that, you know, the two elements that you have here, you have Tina being dragged and you also have that. And they both blend together to the point where it's not oversaturated or anything. It's there to draw you in and wonder what Nancy's going to do. And it hooks you. The basement is revealed to be connected to the same boiler room Tina had went into. Going into inside, Nancy was attacked by the same man who finally revealed him's name is Freddy, realizing that she is dreaming. She burns her arm on the boiler pipes to force herself to wake up. Upon awakening, she screams in the pain in the classroom, alarming the teacher in the class. Embarrassing and scared, Nancy elects to leave the class and go home while her arm is still burned in the same spot as in the dream. Now, I told my wife this because she was watching this with me, right? I was like, I remember this burn being so much more. It's like Freddie just took her and gave her an Indian rubber.
Yeah, it was only like a light shade of pink. Right. But if this is where the whole suspend disbelief comes from, because if we were going by the boiler room standards, then skin would have been hanging off.
Right.
In my head. But it was just like a little bullseye right on her arm. And she just touches it. And I'm like, no. Her skin would have been badly, badly burned. And now we're looking at this like, come on. Could you have thrown more into this a little bit? Just a little bit to make it more believable? Because remember, he grabs her arm and puts it on that for like a good hot second. And you just hear the skin sizzle. So right. You're like, okay, you got right me here.
But right, I just was just remembering it being bigger than what it was, you know, because of nostalgia and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, she burned her arm. It's like a little spot. But I get it. It's part of the dream sequence and stuff like that. But does that still hold up?
Now that you bring it up,
I was like, that's kind of weak.
Yeah, like you could give us a little bit more.
But right
now that we're doing this, I'm questioning my 9.5 from earlier. It's dramatic. It's dropping dramatically.
And that's actually how I felt watching it with a modern day eye, is the fact that, you know, I love this nostalgically, but as I'm going, it's plumbing it down a little bit. But, you know, we'll just have to see where we land at the end of this review, though.
Well, I've already had the minus 2 points, so you be the judge.
All right. These nightmares causes her to talk to Rod and Jill, who finishes telling her what he saw in Tina's mother's room bedroom. He tells Nancy that he never saw anyone, and when he first saw Tina being murdered, he assumed he was having another nightmare. When Rod mentions that all four slashes in Tina's chest happened simultaneously, she finally believes Rod's innocent. Okay, if you're already believing Rod's innocent when your dad's interrogating you, then why do you need to actually know if Rod's innocent?
Why would you need to talk to him some more and interview him some more if right. you're already on his side?
Unless it's like, you know, I think this guy's innocent, but I'm not sure he's innocent. I'm kind of doubtful in my own mind.
She's got a little bit of doubt still.
Right. So that could be it, you know, but... You know, Rod's like, I didn't do it. I'm innocent with this. I witnessed her having slashes in her chest. And, you know, he was very, he was just honest with her. Yeah. And I feel for the guy because he's in jail for something he didn't really do, even though he does have a criminal record. Yeah. But for once, he didn't do anything wrong.
wow, just skim right over that? Well, come on now. For once.
Right. Jeez. The guy is innocent. What about those other guys? Those other things that you did? Huh, Rod?
Burglary.
But yeah, later at home, Nancy is taking a bath when she falls asleep, causing Freddy's glove to emerge in the water, but was forced to submerge when Marge knocks on the door. She warns her daughter to not fall asleep because she watched Dateline that night and told her not to be falling asleep and offered her warm milk. To which Nancy rejects it, calling it grouse. As Nancy drifts off into the tub, Freddy pulls Nancy under the water, causing her to scream, which causes her mother to come running into the bathroom after Nancy is able to wake up and get out of the tub. To be honest, and I'm just joking about the whole Dateline thing, but it just seems like one of those things that your mother would say to you. Now, honey, do not stay in the bathtub too long. You're going to drown. And remember those commercials that we used to get in, like, in the 90s? Where you have a kid that, like, the babysitter is supposed to be watching the kid, and the kid's in the bathtub, and he drowns. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, as a kid, I'm also thinking this to myself, how is that even possible? Because, so, it reminds me of that kind of thing of, like, mentality of, like, I just got done watching Dateline, or Current Affair, and I'm... And I saw someone drown in the bathtub.
Yeah. As soon as you said Dateline, I got flashbacks of the old, I don't know if you remember this, the commercials that used to play. It's 10 o'clock. Do you know where your kids are? That's what I got from that scene. Because you could tell she's already plastered. She's right. Like, don't fall asleep. You're drowned. And she's just... shaking her head. I'm like, this chick is already sloshed. It's probably only 9 o'clock at night.
It might not be a good idea, Mom, to have the liquor bottle while you're telling me this. And why would you warm up milk? I'm not a 6 month old baby. I'm not a little baby.
Come on. Who's really drinking warm milk? Let's be real.
Right. But I do love the scene, though, where you actually have Freddy's hand come up and it grabs her. I love that whole entire aspect of it. And then it pulls her down under the water. It has like a Jaws kind of flavor to it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that holds up still. I think that holds up.
Well, it holds up if you didn't watch the documentary on it, because it kind of pulls that curtain back. So everybody, don't watch the documentary.
I watched the documentary.
Did you? Still, see, yeah. Exactly. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, this scene is still probably up there, as you said, Jaws. Basically, it is probably the best moment in horror.
Yes.
To this day, still. Because you basically get her pulled under, and it's not a bathtub anymore, and it's just a lot of water. And, come on, Jaws, water. I think it was a nice little twist to this scene to make it more scarier for people.
And get this... I remember watching Stephen King's It and being scared of it because he came up through the drain when the kid was taking a shower. Now I'm scared that Freddy's glove is going to come up through the drain and pull me down.
So you're not taking any kind of showers or baths for this entire month?
I'll be like, look, you know what? I'm just going to take a sponge bath and I'm good.
I will use this sink over here. I think this right. sink is pretty safe.
No, not really, because then Freddie can use it as the...
But yeah. if you do the sink, you can have your warm milk while you're doing it. So I think it's a catch 22 over here.
Relaxing. But yeah, I love the scene. The scene is fantastic. And then also too, that night, Glenn climbs into Nancy's bedroom through a window, perfectly normal. And Nancy reveals her thoughts about Tina's murder. She asks Glenda to watch over her while she sleeps. Nancy goes to sleep and in her dream, she leaves her house. As she walks into an area, she asks Glenn if he is still watching her, and she hears a yes, what appears to be him, which he appears behind a bush. But one has to wonder, is this really him? If it was, it would be pretty much have to mean that Glenn also had fallen asleep, which means she's SOL. But
army of one in this scene.
Yes. But I think that I would have been cool if to see Glenn and them try to take Freddy on together.
Oh, yeah.
I get the fact that he's supposed to be manning, watching her. But you're not going to... Here's the thing. You're not going to go on ahead and stay up all night. It's no. hard as hell to stay up all night.
No.
Not only that, but you're all exhausted as hell for staying up all night as well.
So you're screwed either way.
Right. And even if you have coffee, you're still screwed.
Oh, yeah.
But what did you think of the voice in the background and then the whole entire scene where she's walking?
To start the scene off, I don't think it's him at all, because it just, if you're supposed to man guard, right? I'm not going to hide behind a bush. I'm going to follow behind you as you walk up. I'd be like hopping from tree to tree, bush to bush. But no, my man, you just see him one time. Yeah, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Pop back in behind the bush and she goes about her merry way. I would have been like, I would have fired him as a friend when I woke up. Because
she wanted to fire him as a boyfriend that time. Because you jerk, you fell asleep.
Yep. I was like, dude, what are you even in this movie for? And I'm like, dude, you've already got a D plus for me compared to Rod over here. Like, Rod's more of a man than you, because you're supposed to be protecting your chick that you want to bang, and you're like back here 50 feet behind a bush. Right. To me, I'm like, nah, no thanks,
man. No, you're not protecting. You're protecting your own self, just as Rod also was protecting his own. Well, not protecting his own self, but wanting something else. But, you know, I do like the fact that, you know, you have that comfort with Nancy of like, okay, Glenn's here with me, so I'm okay, but I'm still hesitant about moving around this area.
Yeah,
as well.
As she moves along, you don't see him again. And no. That's why I'm like, dude passed out. I'm like, there was no like camera shot back, nothing. It was just her full speed ahead on this part of the movie. And I'm like, nah, dude's gone. So he was probably awake for what? 5 minutes?
5 minutes the most. There's no way that he's staying up for 20 minutes.
No, because he already comes over in his jammies and she's in her jammies. And I'm like, you two, the worst Scooby gang ever. That's what this is, because he quits after 5 minutes. And yeah, as soon as I get back to the real world, I'll be smacking the shit right out of this dude.
Same. But after going inside and locking the front door, she begins to going up the stairs to her room, only to discover that the carpet of the stairs appears to have turned into a marshmallow as Freddy Krueger breaks the window on the front door. As Nancy struggles to go up the stairs, she hears her mother calling out to her for help. Upon reaching the top of the stairs, she hurries into her room where she finds the lights off and dozing Glenn. So, therefore, her own dream also ratted Glenn out.
That is terrible. In your own dream, you rat your own boy out.
That's pretty bad.
Only in horror movies do we get to rat our own homeboy out, man. Like, that's just terrible.
It is. Look, bro, you're supposed to stay up with me. What the hell is wrong with you? Look, Nancy, I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry. It's 12:30 at night, midnight here. I snuck up into your room. I am so sorry.
I had another thing on my mind. I wasn't trying to play protector, okay?
Okay. That's fine.
I was protecting something else, and that's what he should have said. But
right. When Nancy begins telling herself in the front of the mirror that everything is all a dream and not real, Freddy suddenly bursts through the mirror and pounces on her. During the struggle, Nancy tries to wake Glenn up to reveal after breaking herself free of Freddy's grasp. She grabs her feather pillow to defend herself, but Freddy slashes it and throws it away, causing a lot of feathers to fly everywhere. As Freddy continues to scuffle with her, Nancy's alarm clock goes off and off, causing her to wake up. Glenn, who is indeed fallen asleep in the physical world, also wakes up to the noise of the alarm clock, along with Nancy's screams, that later proceeds to chastise him for having not stayed awake, and she scolds for him up for falling asleep. Marge suddenly calls out to Nancy, causing Glenn to immediately leave the room through the same window he went through. So Nancy tells him not to leave yet. And I'm like, why would you want him to stay there? Your mom is coming to see what's going on. And she hears you yelling at somebody.
And she looked back like she was waiting for him to be there. Like she was already like having a story of why he's already here.
Like, right. Already developed in her head.
Nope.
No.
It's better no off story. For you.
Right. No story is going to, your mom's not going to believe that shit.
With a hormone hungry boyfriend that lives across the street from you, just happened to be in your room after midnight.
Okay.
Wonder why he's here. Okay.
Right.
As you were, close the door.
I can explain. Okay. You know, Nancy, about those guys that live across the street, they're not very nice. That's what I heard.
And they only want you for one thing, Nancy. Dang. Okay.
Okay.
That is like a bad after school special right there.
It is.
Like, this is what not to do. They were trying to help us. Look. In this movie, they were trying to help us back in the day.
But now we're getting to the whole thing where Marge comes into the room in her nightgown. She asks her daughter if she's okay. Nancy convinces her that it was just a dream, that she is going to go back to bed. After Marge turns off the lights and leaves the room, Nancy calls out to Glenn, but discovers that he has left. Of course he did. After finding him, they both go to the police station to see Rod. Meanwhile, in Rod's cell, an invisible Freddy tries to ties up the bed sheets into a noose and proceeds to quietly wrap it around Rod's neck while he just lies asleep. After Nancy manages to convince her father to let her and Glenn visit Rod, Freddy proceeds to drag the ladder by the noose and hang him from the ceiling cells, making it look like he committed suicide. When Lieutenant Thompson and his subordinate notices Rod's being hanged, they immediately untie the noose around his neck. Upon checking for a heart attack, they realize that Rod had died, which left Nancy devastated with the cops not knowing that Freddy was responsible. Rod's death is deemed a suicide.
This scene is probably the coolest kill scene in a horror movie. Because you don't even see nobody do this. You just see the bed sheet just creeping up and boom, got him. So quick. I think this scene still holds up to this day for me.
I love that scene. Yes.
That scene is quick, easy, and it gets the point across, I think.
Right. And it also makes it look like that Rod felt guilty for killing Tina. As well. So it makes him look even more guilty for something he didn't do. And it was because of Freddy. And then you also have Nancy, who's still horrified about what happened. You know, the lieutenant is like, okay, something's going on here. But he doesn't quite know what's going on. But yeah, I thought that scene was pretty good.
I think
I still like it. Up. Yeah. So the next day, a graveside service is being held for Rod at Evergreen Cemetery. After the funeral, Nancy tells her parents that Rod was not the killer and describes the killer as a horribly burned man who wears a dirty red and green sweater, a fedora hat, and has razors on his fingers. This causes the color to drain out of both of her parents' faces, indicating recognition. Marge then takes her to the Kaja Institute for the study of sleep disorders, which ensures she gets some sleep. So you have a killer that's killing people in their sleep. So therefore, she's going to take her daughter to a sleep clinic to help see what's going on with the daughter to find out what's going on with her sleeping habits.
Okay. Oh, my God. When I watch this back, I'm like, so she's having trouble sleeping. This person comes at her when she sleeps. Let's give a sleep study. And remember, this is coming from a person that's probably drunk.
Right. So
we have to factor that in most of this movie.
My favorite thing is, though, when the father goes, you need to see what's going on with our daughter. I'm working on it.
And again, we get another shit eye roll from him.
And then those sleep doctors were also boring, too. They look like they were about to go into a coma. He goes, she's dreaming now. She's going into the REMs. And you should have seen the clip that I actually posted on TikTok. I actually have a scene where it has them, and all of a sudden it starts playing REM, Losing My Religion.
I saw that video. Yeah. I was like, this is amazing.
Thanks.
And what makes this scene funnier to me, do you recognize one of the nurses?
No, I don't.
The lead nurse that talks to her is Wes Craven's wife.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's wild. I actually watched this last night and saw her name in the credits that she played a nurse. And they were married, I think, for 5 or 6 years after this movie, and they got divorced. So that was pretty wild to have his wife, actually.
That's pretty cool. I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. I saw the credits. I'm like, wait, Craven? Lynn Craven? Is that Wes Craven? And I researched it. It was Wes Craven's spouse.
And then, you know, as Nancy goes through a comprehensive test, she once again has another nightmare, no surprise, after Marge and the doctors manage to keep her under control. They discover a white streak in her hair, in her arm cut. Nancy then finds that she has brought something out from her dream besides her gray hair, Freddy's battered hat. Upon seeing the hat, this arouses concerns, but also other feelings in Marge, who is clearly hiding a secret. But let's talk about this. So you mean to tell me, Freddy, you didn't do anything but change her hair?
Of all things he could do, he puts a streak in this girl's hair and loses his hat.
Yeah.
A supernatural being can change hair.
That was weak. That was just, Wes, I love you, but that was some weak writing.
I think, to be honest with you, I think the purpose of this scene was just the hat. But I think they kind of headlined the hair more than the hat in this scene.
But I'm just wondering, do you think it was just because of the mental stress of her trying to fall asleep that she had her hair
turned gray? I think so. But I think they should have harped on the hat more than the hair, because as soon as she comes out of sleep, that's the first thing they notice, instead of the inanimate object in her hands. Is what got me.
Right, so, the fedora. Right.
I'm just like, hair? We're talking about hair when she's got a burned ass hat in her hands? Why don't that be the first topic here?
Exactly. No,
your hair changed. Yeah. No.
Absolutely. All of a sudden she becomes Rogue from X-Men.
That would be pretty dope, though.
Right. Nancy confronts Marge about the hat and points out that the name Fred Krueger is written into the hat. She demands if she knows who he is. Although Marge reveals almost nothing, she insists that no one is trying to kill her, and all Nancy needs is to get some sleep. This causes her daughter to argue back at her, which makes Marge slap her in the face, because that's what alcoholic mothers do. She reassures Nancy that Fred Krueger won't come after her as he is dead. Which Nancy would also be dead because she's listening to her mom. When Nancy confronts her over knowing who is all along, Marge insists that she is sick and is just imagining things, and that she'll feel better when she gets some sleep. This makes Nancy snap, smashing her bottle of liquor and leaving the house.
Let's start with the hat, shall we? Who puts their name in their hat? I'm just asking. that's some 1984 stuff, right?
Well,
I don't think I've ever
heard. I did that when I was a teenager, as a kid, but not as a grown-ass adult.
That's what I'm saying. This dude is a full being, right? At this point, he's up there in age, I'm pretty sure. But this man is trying to be a teenager. If I lose my hat, please return to F. Krueger. Like, come on now.
Cougar or is it Freddy Cougar? I don't know.
Like, I don't see the R here. Is it Cougar? And the easiest way to get punished by your alcoholic mom is to slash her favorite bottle of liquor. Yeah. That's the only two things I got for here, because this scene was a little bit hilarious to me, because we go from like a serious role with the whole sleep study to a real life battle here, because you got your mom battling alcoholism and now you're basically having a battle with your mom now. Instead of Freddie versus you, it's now you versus your mother. And right. That ties in with the real life stuff. I got nothing for the alcoholism though.
Me either. And it seems okay. I mean, it's not the best, but you know, I'm like, this I could actually done with maybe a little bit more for this.
I think this was their way of trying to make the movie hit home a little bit harder, I think, to make the characters more human here.
I gotcha.
And because, remember, Supernatural all the time, you gotta put some realism woven into your story somewhere. So I think that's where they're going with this thing, because it was kind of very, very laggy to me.
Yeah.
After the scene we had. So
now we have meeting up with Glenn again. Nancy reveals she hasn't slept in 7 days. Glenn at this point asks her, why is her hair gray? I'm just kidding. Tells Nancy about the balliness of sleeping and informs her that when the villainous see a monster in their dream, they turn their back on said monster, robbing it of all its power, and it will disappear. He then notices that Nancy is reading a book on Kelly McAllister's booby traps and asks her on what it is for, and she informs him that this is for survival.
The movie turns into Home Alone in a drop of a hat. Ha.
Right.
See what I did there?
Yes, I did. Very good placement.
This was kind of funny to me, because it really turned into Home Alone for me. It was
it,
like,
it does.
I'm waiting for this man to walk through the front door and this sledgehammer is going to hit him and paint can is going to hit him on the head and stuff like
we'll
that.
We'll get to it. But I do like the fact that they would have actually left out. I understand that this is the 80s and this is before Home Alone, because it came out in 1990. But
did Nightmare on Elm Street predict Home Alone?
Maybe. But I think just having the fact of Nancy explain to Nancy of taking back the power would have been enough. You didn't have to have the Looney Tunes playbook of booby traps.
It was the Acme playbook from the Looney Tunes over here.
Right. Wile E. Coyote.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I just think of it would work better if they went on ahead and be like, okay, you can take the power back by turning your back on the monster himself. You didn't have to have that booby trap book.
No. And we don't really need her setting up the booby traps either.
No.
I think without those two scenes.
We're going to talk about that. We really are.
Oh God, here we go. This is going to be the best part of the show right here.
Right. Freddy Krueger was a child murderer who was killed at least 20 children over a decade earlier when he was released from jail, and technically due to the improper signed warrant, the parents of the victims, that with Marge among them, proceeds to track Krueger down to an abandoned boiler room. They pound gasoline all over the boiler room, pour the trail of the gasoline out the door, and it's end of the trail, and watch the boiler and burn until the fire went out. When she assures that Nancy that Krueger cannot hurt anyone, she reveals he is blatted glove, which she takes from a hiding place in the furnace as proof. It should be noted here that the glove can't possibly be the same glove that Krueger has been using in the dream world. I do like the fact that you had the mothers like, hey, look, me and a bunch of people got tired of this mass murder. He was let go. So he had to take justice in her own hands and kill this guy. So I like that part of it. And then the fact, too, now this guy is also haunting dreams because of the stuff that the parents did in the past. So that part works for me.
Yeah. Same. Like, we get more backstory here. So since they have the glove, is this why we get the scene in the beginning of him making a new one?
That's actually a good point. Maybe that is a dream.
So
sequence.
So he lost his, so he had to make one in the beginning to get revenge, I'm guessing. That's where my head is at. Because if she has the original, then this man's going around with the one he made in the beginning, then, right? That's where I'm at.
Yeah, that's where I'm at as well. I think that might be it. But I also like how Nancy also comes home and she finds her mom with these balls on the window. Like, as if she went to Home Depot. It's like, sir, give me your bars on the window. What do you recommend for bars for windows? Well, ma'am, let me go ahead and cut these down. Okay, we'll just give you all of the same size. Because every window is probably the same size.
Okay, now we're talking about this. How long was she gone for her mother to do this? Is my next question. Because this is something that would probably take a whole day to do.
Yes.
So if she was gone a whole day, cool. But the fact that she's on the couch, sloshed, after doing the bars on the windows, is downright hilarious for me. Because she hired somebody to do this in, what, I'm going to say 3 to 4 hours?
Yeah, 3 to 4 hours.
That's a lot of windows.
Yeah, that is a lot of windows.
So this scene was kind of laughable for me too, because you come home and your home's a prison now. You can't leave. Nobody can come in. Now what do you do? Come out.
And she also changes the locks too.
Oh, yeah. No, you ain't going nowhere. Jeez.
Even Glenn's not going to be able to come over now and sneak in near your room unless he wants to visit you behind bars.
Just like she did Rod.
Right.
I see what it is there.
Yeah. When Nancy tells her that, so now we're setting up this whole entire deal now where Glenn's going to die.
Oh, so, peace.
Yeah. So basically, she later that night, Nancy calls Glenn and makes a deal with him. She tells him that he is going to go into her dreams and pull Freddy out. She requests Glenn that to be there to knock him out when she pulls Freddy into the physical world. When Glenn insists that nothing will happen, Nancy assures him that they have nothing to lose. Finally, before hanging on, that instructs him to not fall asleep. A few minutes later, she begins to put her plan into motion. However, she is unaware that Glenn's father, Mr. Lance, is watching her, and he tells his wife, Mrs. Lance, that he believes that Nancy's a lunatic and that he doesn't want his son hanging out with her anymore. When Nancy tries to call Glenn, Mrs. Lance picks up instead, and this is where she winds up saying, hey, look, I need to talk to Glenn. Mrs. Lance says, why do you want to talk to Lance? She winds up saying, something important, something secret. And she looks over at Mr. Lance. He wants to talk to her about something secret and something private. And pretty much the father reminds me of my mom. There's no way that you're going to wind up talking to somebody past hours like that.
1000% my mom right there. After 9 o'clock, no phone calls back in the day. 1000% my mom. Wow.
And then you also have that other thing too in the dream sequence with Nancy as well with this too, where Freddy winds up calling her and he goes, I'm your boyfriend now. And licks her on the face, and then she puts the phone down.
Oh man. The tongue in the telephone is legendary also, because anybody that talks about Nightmare on Elm Street thinks about hand in the tub and the big old tongue out of the telephone. Those two scenes are, I still think that scene holds up to this day. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that actually still holds up. I still love the heart. It's just freaky to me.
Oh, yeah.
To see that. And it's still, it's just like that whole entire crucifix scene, right? It still gives me goosebumps. It's still as horrifying and stuff to see. But then, you know, then you also have her set, at this point, they already set up the traps. Nancy already did all the traps. She kept him at Callister the whole entire house.
You said Callister the entire house. That's funny.
And, you know, I just find it kind of laughable. She took the whole entire playbook. She's got the sledgehammer.
All right. I have a question now. Who went to Home Depot first? Did Nancy or her mom? For them bars and them windows, did they go the same time to get the stuff for the house and the bars for the windows?
Well, what if she went to Lowe's instead and her mom went to Home Depot?
No, did Home Depot even?
I don't know, but it sounded good to me for this.
Because if that happened, I would believe it 1,000%.
Right. Although there'd probably just be a local
mom and pop shop.
Yeah. That's wrong. Oh, yeah. Then everybody knows, hey, you, Nancy, you know your mom just came over here to get some bars in the window. What?
Gotta get home quick. Open the scene.
Wait, I need a sledgehammer. Meanwhile, in his room, Gwen falls asleep and Freddy's arm comes out of the bed and pulls Gwen into it, killing him. Krueger then sends a torrent of blood, which shoots out of bed and drenches the room. Upon discovering this, Mrs. Lance, who comes to check on her son and begins screaming in horror, the police, Lieutenant Thompson among them, and an ambulance are soon called in. With Glenn dead, an emotionally distraught and mentally drained Nancy decides to take on Krueger herself. She calls her father and asks him to be ready when she finds the killer. He tells her he will, making it clear that he is just humoring her. He is overly tired daughter and tells the deputy to watch the house. Nancy then sets her watch and says a prayer and goes to sleep to find Freddy. Hey, Dad, look, I need your help. Okay. And at this point, the dad can't even hear her. She has to get his attention. He's over there like, what the fuck?
Yep.
It's like, Dad, look, I'm going to get this guy who's killing my friends. Okay. I need your look. I need, whenever I wake up, I'm going to have him. Okay, Dad. Okay, Nancy. Okay. Look, your boyfriend just died across the street, hon. I don't have time for this. Right.
I'm scraping this kid off the ceiling and you're calling me with this shit.
Right. But I do like the whole entire deal of Glenn getting sucked into the bed and the blood's blurring up and stuff. I thought that was really cool. It's still iconic.
For this movie, I think this is still the top for me. As overall horror kills, I still think this is top three for me. Like the hole in the bed, the TV going in the bed, the sheets going to the bed after him, and then nothing but blood all over the walls. Still top three for me of all time. That was it.
But what did you think of the whole fact too? You actually have Krueger coming into our world now. Now she's got him.
Yep.
I like how she has a hold of him and she has him like this, and then she wakes up and she's like, where is he?
Yep. And then all of a sudden you get a big old surprise where he is. Cause this is the same scene as she wakes up with the trellis and the flowers on her and everything too. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause I'm just trying to pinpoint where we are.
Yeah. This is actually the dream sequence where she's climbing up onto the roof. You remember? And that whole entire thing falls on top of her.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she kicks that off and then she's like, where the hell is he? Where the hell is he? And then probably the best jump scare in this movie, he jumps out from the side of the bed. That's the scene that got me as a little kid.
It was
quiet.
It was eerie quiet, and it just comes out of nowhere, and you don't expect it. There's no music to signify the fact that there's somebody lurking or beside her in the bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
You're wondering, too, does she have to go back to sleep again to try and get this guy back into our world or what? But I love it. I love how they set that up. And then now you have the booby traps from Kevin McAllister. You have the sledgehammer that ends up kicking, that winds up coming into and basically kicking Freddy in the balls. Then you have him being set on fire like Marvin Harry. Then you.
we are ruining this movie for me now. Jeez. Oh man.
But I think it is horrifying to see this man on fire though. It is definitely horrifying.
Cause he's still walking around like nothing's wrong.
No.
He's like, this ain't my first time. What the hell?
And it's like they over poured gasoline on this poor guy all over again. So they're burning fire with fire. So you're burning someone that got burnt with fire with fire.
Yep. And he's trying to still chase her down while on fire still.
Right.
For the second time in his life.
You know, then we have that. Now we're at the point now where the father is now hearing his daughter. Dad, help me. Help me. And the father's like, look, we have to go and help my daughter now. Forget about Glenn. Glenn's dead.
Because he put somebody on the house to watch for her.
Right.
And then he runs inside to grab her. To grab him to go over.
But if you're watching the house, just go get his daughter out of the house.
Just help.
Right.
Like, and then you're like, shit, now the door's locked.
Can you just imagine, though? Hey, Lieutenant, your daughter, she's calling for help again.
Why are you standing here?
Right? Just look, you told me to go and get you. But, so... Now we get into this whole entire thing now where now the mother is getting ready to be sunk into the bed because she's passed out drunk. Yeah. And that's kind of confusing. So now is he entering her dream state now? And now she's becoming part of that dream now? And what dream are we actually seeing when we have that ending?
I have a theory for this. So remember, she's drunk on the couch. Mm-hmm. So she's had too much to drink it, so she passes out too, probably. So both of them are probably asleep at this time. And I don't know where she goes from the couch to the bed, because Freddy goes on the bed and all that. So that kind of doesn't make sense, because we see her again. So I don't know. That part doesn't make sense to me. So I'm anxious to hear what you say about it. Because
I'm thinking that he's entering her dream state and he killed her.
So my next question is, how do we see her at the end then? She's dead.
No, I don't know. It's just kind of confusing.
It's wild, right?
Yeah.
I have tried to wrap my head around this ending for years. And
it's like Inception, isn't it? It's
kind of like So you don't know if she's really dead, then who's the skeleton then? Then how do we see her at the end?
It's very weird on how they end it.
And they don't really answer it either. So it's our interpretation, basically.
Right. And then you have, hey, Mom. It's the next morning. Just, hey, Nancy. Look, be careful going to school. Okay, I love you. I love you, too. And then you see Rod, you see Glenn, you see Tina, all them on this in this car, in this convertible. And I love how all of a sudden the convertible top just
shoots out of nowhere.
Shoots out of nowhere, but also the convertible top just comes and bam, just slams on the car. And then it's Freddy's red and green sweater, which one fact is, that car was actually going faster than what it was supposed to go. So therefore, the reactions that you got was actually their full-on reactions.
I saw that.
So I thought that was pretty cool on how they filmed it. And then she gets sucked through the window. The mother does.
Yep. And you don't want to pause it before she gets sucked through the window either. Just saying.
Because you can actually see it's a mannequin.
You did that, didn't you?
Yeah. Same. But even if you don't pause it, though, even though it's very fast and it's supposed to be that disbelief, I noticed it. And I don't know if it's because of the fact it's the 4K or not. I noticed it.
I think the 4K told the story quicker because I watched it. I watched it on as in 1080p, and then I watched it in 4K, and you can see it a lot broader in the 4K. You don't have to pause it. So if you got the 4K, it gives it away.
But I definitely love the 4K, though. I love having this on 4K. I'm glad that you recommended it. I watched the uncut version, and I watched this one. I like the uncut a little bit more than this one.
Yeah.
But whenever we're stripping away the nostalgia, and we talked about how we rated it, I gave it an 8.5. You gave it close to a 9.
Do you stick with your 8.5?
No.
Me?
What
are
you sticking?
The hell
so
no!
So where do you stand on it?
If I had to give it a rating right now, I would 7.5.
Okay.
Still.
Okay. I'm going to go down to like a 6.5.
Oof.
Like, I love it. And it's the very start. I love this movie. I really do. I think I'll watch this every single time it comes on. But nostalgically, I love it.
Okay.
Modern day review, though, it doesn't land like I wanted it to.
No. I think I've said this on my show a few times. I think time frame kills movies and kills the nostalgia. Like, what would happen today if we took that movie? It was never released back then and released it today. Would it still be a hit?
It would be 100. You want to know what the budget would have been? Because this is actually an indie movie, right?
Yeah.
So this would be $150 to $250 million budget. And it would be oversaturated with CGI. It wouldn't be as good. And therefore, they won't be able to make their budget back, which also means you don't get any of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Nope. I think time frame still kills movies, because one of the movies we talked about recently was the original Exorcist. What would happen if we brought that out today?
Right. Oh, yeah. And then guess what? Nightmare on Elm Street is actually 94% on Rotten Tomatoes and 84% for the popcorn meter.
Really? Rotten Tomatoes actually gave it a good rating?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah.
94. Okay.
I get it. I get the idea of why. But
yeah.
Let's see. Brandon Main says, I agree with that. Okay. Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you, Beep. Thanks for popping in.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's my partner in crime.
Okay. It's good. It's good seeing you in the comments. That is surprising for the Rotten Tomato score. But yeah, all in all, Nightmare on Elm Street, great fit. I still will watch this regardless of the fact that my nostalgia has died down a little bit.
Yeah.
But modern day rating and stuff is, you know, I still love it. I still will watch this movie no matter what. I have this on the DVD box set as well. So yeah.
They got my money a few times.
So Dustin, my question is, what do you guys have coming out for your podcast?
We will be doing an Alien Romulus review this week.
Oh, nice.
So, because that just hit digital last week, so we got to hit that up. We are talking about doing a best action movie of all time list also. We will also be doing an 824 episode, a Neon episode, and I think that's everything in the making right now.
Okay. Let's see here. I know that we're going to be doing our review of The Penguin episode 7 coming out on Wednesday for that episode. And I cannot wait to dive back into this world again. And then after that, we have one more episode. And of course, 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time for that. We do have an audio only podcast episode that's going to be dropping sometime next week. It's called Best Opening Scene, Top 5 Opening Scenes Ever in a Movie. So that's what I have being released. We just released our episode of The Penguin, episode 6 today. So go ahead and check that out. And, oh, yeah. Okay, so you guys are also doing a Venom review.
Venom review. That's why he's on my payroll.
There you go.
and go check out their Ernest review, too. That thing was amazing.
Thank you. I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
That was another one of my favorite movies of all time, Ernest Scared Stupid.
I loved it. I loved going back and rewatching it. But yeah, that's going to be it as far as this goes. Thank you again for wanting to come on the show. I do appreciate it. Thank you to everyone, including you're welcome anytime. Thank you to my wife commenting in the comment section. Thank you to Brandon also showing some love over here as well. Oh, right, guys. Well, that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe button. Don't forget to give me a 10-star review on our on our podcast, where you guys get your podcasts from. Also, too, our letterbox is actually in the description below, so you guys can see my reviews that I've done for movies of 2024 so far. So go ahead and check that out. Always until next time, guys. Bye-bye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.